public facilities, and some of those are religious facilities, you know, churches and synagogues and so forth. And I think we should note them. You know, that's, you know, as a church going person, and I know not everybody is, it just felt really missing. And missing to the character of our community. Okay, some other things that I deferred until discussion. biggest one is as we think about, you know, over the course of 20 years, how are we going to manage the growth in demand and maybe need for parking and other things across parts of our community, and managing the impact of additional residents on, you know, streets and car flow. What I'd really like us to consider as an aspirational basis is aspiring to some kind of, or at least aspiring to exploring, some kind of hop-on, hop-off trolley system up and down El Camino Real. This may not be affordable in my lifetime, but it might. It might be feasible at some point. And if we have that kind of connection, you can imagine what school pickup looks like. If a third of the kids coming out of the high school and the junior high school hop on a trolley and take it to their after-school program, or to close to where mom and dad work, or to a place where they can meet up with mom and dad that's not in the middle of downtown, so you don't have to drive in and have all of that. It could help make a lot of the traffic and flow things workable. So I would like to see that, and I could provide, you know, possible language, but just see us to aspire to considering that. with regard to, yeah, that's probably in mobility 5.1 or 5.2. Also, and considering something that also that would connect the lake and zoo area and the community center, you know, the little like T-bars there. If we think of something that that we can use to potentiate land uses. Okay, other things. On the minor side, could we consider a policy of facilitating the allowance of partially off-grid homes?
That's mentioned in there, I believe.
It's actually, I did not see off-grid homes in there. If I missed that, and I thought that might be an encouragement. I was looking at page 120 PSI 6.2 as being a place where that might be mentioned. If it's already covered, then you don't need to add it again. But if it's not already covered, if my colleagues are comfortable, it would be nice to envision that potential. There are not a ton of people that are going to want to do that, but some might. I'm going through my things as I get notes as I get them. Okay. I'd like us to talk about, in terms of where, as we're dealing with undergrounding of utilities, which is something mentioned in the PSI 1.3 in private utilities, and we're looking at resilience of our grid, that we might want to consider, add a policy to consider establishing mechanisms to finance undergrounding for meaningful sections of utilities. Because the way this works now, you have a property owner, and all kinds of Atascadero properties have little narrow street fronts and deep lots. And so the property owner says, oh, and you want me to underground this little piece here from here to here. And if it's not done when the property develops, then there isn't the money to pay for it later. And if it's done when the property develops, oh, goody, we got another 100 feet of underground utilities against, between two poles and take it back above ground again. And maybe, you know, and it may be 10 years or 15 years before the, you know, something meaningful happens. Something that other cities are doing, and I talk about this with staff, is, you know, put, essentially, instead of having somebody underground the, their own utilities, put some money into a fund in lieu, and then the city can, when you get a section that's workable and the time is right, you can do a meaningful section of undergrounding in a way that is cost efficient and has that, an impact.
Is all that just to say we should have a statement in there that says we will pursue undergrounding? I believe it mentioned undergrounding is mentioned at least once in this general, but I mean, essentially you're saying it should be essentially our policy to try to underground where possible.
Well, but what I'm looking for is actually not the, right now we have the requirement that
I understand,
the underground
but I mean, that's a level of detail. That's a level of detail I don't think we're going to find or put in the general plan. That would be like a way of, you know, we put in the plan that, you know, we seek to underground utilities where possible, and then we develop, you know, more details of how we might fund that. Like you say, we could have a, you know, we could have put some up front and have people pay us back, or have people put money into a fund, and then, you know, when you accumulate enough, you underground some. But those are like mechanics and details at a level I don't think we would, you know, put in the general plan.
Yeah, what I'm looking for is to give businesses some flexibility and give residents some flexibility in how these are done so that we can make these changes more meaningful and impactful.
I understand, but I mean, we're not going to develop that level of that degree of detail in terms of providing flexibility. We could simply say that, you know, it's our goal to underground utilities, and we'll look for options to that would enable us to promote that faster than currently occurs. I mean, is something like that viable for staff? Something simple. Because I want to avoid trying to get into prescriptive answers and how we're going to do something, these things, but simply agree that, yes, we'd like to see that happen.
I'm watching staff over there. It does seem appropriate to the level of detail that I saw currently in there, but I don't have access to the language of the plan right now to pull up what it is that I was looking at.
There is already a policy in the general plan, in the draft general plan, that does speak to all new utilities going underground. And we already have that in our municipal code as well. But I think what you're alluding to is the bigger picture of existing utilities and funding that undergrounding of larger pieces of infrastructure and just having a visionary statement that goes that direction. And I think we can draft something for your view at a later date.
That would be helpful if you're the mayor, if you're comfortable with that.
And your guys are comfortable with a general statement of
was already an undergrounding policy.
Yeah.
There is already a policy. It's already in the municipal code for new utilities. There's no idea about how that would be funded. Right now, it's privately funded by new development.
Right. Okay.
Right. And I'm just looking to see if it can be funded, consider something that might be more flexible so that we can make it more cost efficient and more meaningful. I want to, on a couple of other things with regard to the land use on San Ramon that we were talking about, I do think it would be appropriate to have that be mixed use as opposed to Innovation Flex in that section there, at least along the San Ramon next to Apple Valley. It's these interfaces we have between one land use and another are always where we struggle, and it is all over this city because of the physical configuration of where developable space is. In this city, it's in a narrow band along our two main arteries, and so there is not a piece of there's hardly a commercial property in the city that isn't a stone's throw from residential properties of some kind. And those kinds of, let alone, you know, different levels. There's multifamily that's going to be near, it's going to be near single family because you have those abutments. And it's this, so it's, so we struggle with that. I think it's also, given the neighborhood concerns, that we don't have to go quite as aggressive in this section that you're looking at right now on the screen on El Camino, that we could back off from that, as other council members have suggested, and allow in the center of that section, you know, the areas between San Benito Road and just north of San Anselmo, that we're not necessarily, we don't have to have deep multifamily at this level. That, you know, orange along the street maybe, and some yellow behind, effectively, would be fine with me. I'd like to see staff look at that and see what's workable in terms of what we think we're going to need, and what we might need to have to accommodate in the next general housing element cycle.
To get consensus on that, I mean, I heard you mention having more or less orange on El Camino and then yellow where the orange is. I think.
Yeah. Is that what we were?
Well, I think, I mean, I was okay with the brown for the most part, although I'm wondering on some of those third layer things, especially up on La Uva and Marco or whatever, concerned about going that far back with the brown. But I was interested in making the orange essentially yellow, but at a, you know, a quarter acre density, if you will, higher than 1 acre density, than the current 1 acre, but not multifamily, where the orange isn't. But I felt like that was acceptable over here on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Is it correct?
The yellow is definitely where the direction I would go for the orange.
Okay.
There's a couple lots along El Camino. There's like the Church of Christ. There's like some that are like right along El Camino that would be, you know, if someone wanted, if there was going to be a brown area, the ones that are right on El Camino that are the bigger lots. Mm-hmm. I know a patchwork along there is probably not going to work either, but I think keeping the SFR instead of the orange, especially, you know, Marco, Sia, Uva, all those ones that go up into those neighborhoods, keeping that SFR, knowing full well that somebody under state guidelines could put more. I mean, the residents would know that, but it's no different than what they can do now, right?
Right. Understand.
I mean, what did you mean by adding more density to an SFR?
Well, I mean, right now it's zone 1 acre minimum. And I'm saying that as a transition from those multifamily that we're talking about that would front El Camino,
mm-hmm.
as a transition, you know, it would be okay to allow more density than one per acre.
So you're saying that you can make a lot split on an SFR to like four quarter right. acre lots.
Right. Or two half acre lots or something. I don't think it needs to be 1 acre to provide that kind of buffer, right. but I don't want it to be multifamily because I think that's too much right up against those existing neighbors.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Question. First of all, the yellow single family residential, does that presume 1 acre minimum lot?
So the yellow single family residential is a general plan designation that when we adopt zoning will be broken down into perhaps up to four different zoning districts, one being a quarter acre, one being a half acre, one being 1 acre, and maybe even one more. So you could have that be single family as on the general plan map. And when we get to zoning, then you can break it down into
okay.
whatever is appropriate for that particular neighborhood.
I think that's great because that allows us to say, no, give our guidance tonight, make it yellow, make the orange yellow along SIA. When we get to the specific zoning, we'll talk about, you know, half, quarter, one, whatever. So,
okay, thank
I think
you.
We have and consensus then
that, I think we've heard that loud and clear that, okay. and
good.
We'll redesignate that area and bring a draft back to you in terms of changing that medium density along El Camino to a low density multifamily for the frontage lots and then transitioning back to single family residential as we get two or more lots back off of El Camino for the area south of San Benito.
Yeah,
because the area north of San Benito is already multifamily today.
Understand.
We can't take that away. Right, already being developed that way as well.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
And I'm just wondering if part of this issue might not be height limitations, because I mean, what I'm hearing from the neighbors, and these are fairly sloped lots, is suddenly you don't want to wake up and suddenly have, you know, a four-story building right, you know, over your backyard, if there is the opportunity to not have that happen. Is part of having these various multifamily designations, can we set height limits on them that might be selective as to how close they are to single family or you know, other kinds of things, considerations?
You absolutely can do that, and we'll do that at the zoning level.
Okay, great. Let's keep that up in mind, because that can be a way that we manage some of these transitions that are hard. Okay. That'll help. Okay. And then with regard to principle, I'd be comfortable with either a mixed-use approach or a something that's not quite as intense, a multifamily, a lower medium-density multifamily, and like, you know, the kinds of things we see on Santa Isabel and all of these areas around there.
We'll develop a couple of options for that area. What we can't do is take away its multifamily designation that it has today. That's where we get in trouble with the state. We can keep it the same as it is, which is basically a low-density multifamily, or we could do a mixed-use designation as long as it has the same residential designation to it that allows for the same number of units. So we can look at a couple of those options, but I think what I'm hearing, and if there's consensus from the council, that you don't want to see high density at that area or a high building height at that area. And the reason it became a multifamily project in the first place is because it doesn't really, it's a strange property configuration. It doesn't really have a lot of frontage on a road, and it's tucked back there, and its isolation is what lent it to being a multifamily designation rather than a commercial designation.
Yeah, and I also recall, having been on the council when that was approved, that the part of the selling point was a mixed use with commercial on the commercial strip, with the idea being you'd have this nice housing development with residents serving commercial, and you know, you'd have the coffee shop or, you know, whatever there. And I was really disappointed to see a car wash develop there, because that's not serving the walkability by definition. It's sort of the purpose of having it be mixed use up there.
But I think we have consensus on Mr. Dunsmore reiterated, and I think we have consensus on that. So, okay.
Okay.
Excellent.
So we're good on that. I think that the large, so we need to weigh in on.
Charles?
I think, yeah.
We, Councilwoman Funk brought up the San Ramon. Are we the only two that are interested in looking at San Ramon, Ramona, well, flex zones?
Can you go to that map with San Ramon on it? It's a good, very good question. My concern is, and I think staff had this concern about converting, commercial or flex-based properties, in essence, up with more residential. These have always been zoned some form of commercial, correct? Public. I'm sorry.
Public. Public.
They're mostly churches.
I wouldn't say always, but in my city lifetime, which is a decade.
So flex is a change from what they've been, but so would residential be a change from what they've been.
Correct.
I wouldn't
propose
it's been
a
residential,
public,
but I mean,
it's been
mixed,
a public
that would allow residential. I mean, if part of the thing is a buffer, if you will, I am a little kind of less concerned about that for Apple Valley, because Apple Valley was created out of whole cloth. It was residential suburban. It's a neighborhood that was plopped in there, allowed, you know, created by the city council. None of those homes would be there if the council hadn't upzone the area, so I don't feel compelled to, you know, always say, oh boy, you know, they need a transition zone or they need a buffer. But if we're going to talk about doing that, in a mixed use, these lots are deep enough, I think, that if you're going to do that with that in mind, it would be in a horizontal mixed use fashion, perhaps, where, you know, if I'm looking over the back fence from Apple Valley, that's where I'm going to see a house, but that the front part on San Ramon itself would be, or on Ramona, would, you know, be some form of commercial enterprise.
That seems to be appropriate for that area. One issue we have with that spot, and I think part of the reason it became this Innovation Flex, because one of the land uses there is problematic adjacent to housing, and that's the Woods Humane Society. If they choose to start bringing dogs into that location and apply for a use permit to do that, you know, that could be problematic, but that may be problematic to the Apple Valley as it is anyway, so that may not happen, but just a thought. And I mean, it's why this came.
But they're there under a conditional use permit that allowed cats but not dogs, right?
That's for now, yes.
For now, right. But I mean, if they came in, I mean, we would have a bunch of Apple Valley neighbors here saying,
hopefully,
we don't want to listen to barking dogs all the time.
Yeah.
And we would, you know, we or whoever's on council at the time would, you know, act.
Exactly.
Act or not act, you know, based on that. So I'm saying their existence there doesn't, while perhaps unusual, doesn't muddy the water going forward per se. So I mean, if you want to do mixed use there, I would look at it as horizontal mixed use most likely.
Yeah, horizontal for sure. But also you know, if there's a way you can say, I don't know if currently mixed use, there's a percentage, you know, 75 commercial, 75 or 25. History major.
Those are the zoning standards that we'll be developing for the flex or for the mixed use zones. We're doing that now. And I think we're going to come up with three different mixed use zones, one that's all vertical, one that has a higher percentage, and one that has some horizontal along those lines.
Yeah.
And Councilmember Funk, I think you alluded to the north, making that change to the northern part that is above whatever the name of that little street is that leads into the southern part of Apple Valley.
Those lots there, the Innovation Flex, uh-huh. And I don't mean to jump on your comment, but the ones that are next to Barrel Creek, there is no street to get to those violet areas. Those are back lots behind, like the Griffin House is one of the.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand. But that's part of, you know, the already approved Barrel Creek project, if you will. I'm talking about the ones lower down here. Next to Apple Valley.
Oh, the Quonset Hut area.
Yeah. Well, no, Quonset Hut area is over there. I mean, over to left. I'm talking these ones. No, I know. I'm talking about the ones on Ramona. Yeah, where he's got the arrow right there. And then there's a street there.
Yeah.
That, I'm forgetting the name of that street, Conejo or something. And then there's these four lots south of there. And the question in my mind would be, Councilmember Funk, you mentioned this. Are you only talking about changing the flex to mixed on the ones that abut Apple Valley? Or are you talking about all eight or nine lots there?
I'm thinking that you could just the ones next to Apple Valley. I think there's room for Innovation Flex there, right next to the freeway, between the freeway and that creek there.
Right. I mean, my initial thought was to only do those four, but on the other hand, it's like, if we're going to do it, make the
bowl. Two of those lots right now are vacant. The largest one being the Church of Latter-day Saints. I can't imagine they're going anywhere anytime soon. Then there's the A-frame house is the one on the corner of Conejo.
Right.
The Swiss Chalet looking house. And then there's the vacant lot south of that. And then the vacant lot south of, or no, there's a house south of the church that right before the creek goes through there. So there's only one vacant lot, I think, in that whole block.
And I would be comfortable if staff wanted to talk a little further with neighbors in that particular area and help refine exactly what that usage looks like. But it doesn't necessarily need to be the Innovation Flex if that's going to be uncomfortable.
We've heard enough to go and do some additional analysis on this area and understand that we want a better transition and that it should be generally mixed use. So I think we can go forward with that.
Sounds
and
good.
Take a look at that. Thank you.
I've got two other things.
Okay, two others.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. I found that page of my notes that I missed. And that's in recreation type areas. What about allowing for recreation uses in the ag place type? We don't have a ton of ag land, but one of the things that we've struggled with is where can we find some, you know, allow for some land that, you know, dirt bike that not tearing up the shed and with our water supply.
And you want to tear up the Christmas tree farm?
Whatever, you know.
It's the only ag zone we have in the city, or at least I thought so. Apparently there's one of the dinky parcels somewhere.
One of the things I've been looking at is that there's some lag. I don't know if this is currently ag, but you know, it's an area down below those high intensity power lines right at the north of town. Some of it's in the county, some of it's in the but that might be an area where you allow for, you know, outdoor that might.
It's already being proposed for recreation. Right now it's actually out the a big portion of it. And it's in our sphere of influence to potentially be annexed if the property owner wants to do that. But it's not ag right now. It's actually an open space or other designation that sits outside the city. But it is proposed on the bigger map here to be, if I go to that map, it is proposed to be one of the recreation zones. So it's hard to see in this one. It's shown as conservation parks, but it's really a parks area. It's got the red stripes on it way up there. And we can't zone it because it's not in the city limits right now, believe it or not.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, yes. But it's also, I'm also wondering if, you know, since we don't have that much ag, if we can consider allowing outdoor recreation in those ag zones. It wouldn't necessarily have to be.
And I think the only ag zone we have is the Christmas tree farm area or some area along Graves Creek. And then there's one on the way south end of town by the railroad tracks. But we'd have to take a close look at that. We'll take that comment and we'll analyze that to see what can happen.
If there's any there. And otherwise, don't worry about it. The other recreation thing is, can we set criteria for Eagle Ranch, which is in our in sphere of influence, but not within the city limits, but is talked about in this plan?
We do have a couple of policies to talk about this area, Eagle Ranch. And if the council wants to add to those policies, we can do that. Again, keep in mind that if anything moves forward with that property that goes towards annexation in the community, we will also have to draft an entire specific plan for it. And at that time, we'll get into it, you know, in-depth policy analysis. But if there's some high-level direction or visionary direction that's missing in our general plan now, we could do that. Our current general plan speaks of this area, has three policies on it. Our proposed general plan has a couple policies on it about how this should be handled. But if there's things like, hey, we should make sure that we have a trail connection from X to Y.
That's specifically,
you know, that could be something that we have as a visionary statement.
But I mean, clearly, you know, something of that size or magnitude, you know, is going to require a great deal of contemplation and you know, action on our part and staff's part. And the general plan addresses in terms of, obviously, it's got to pay for its own way fiscally. You know, we're going to have to make arrangements with the county, et cetera, et cetera. And those are the most important aspects, I think, of the potential for you. At this point in time, we would end up, you know, having multiple meetings on any action to Eagle Ranch. And I don't know that trying to address it now in the general plan would be particularly useful at this point.
What I was looking to do as part of Land Use Policy 1.8, which is on page 55 of the PDF, I don't know what the exact text is, but just simply include providing trail connections to Los Padres National Forest and the Santa Margarita Ranch, so that we think about as we're looking at mobility around our thing, that we make sure that anything that happens there maintains the kind of connectedness that we're looking to see for our equestrians and others.
It sounds good. I just don't see the need to do it now. I mean, you know, I certainly know that's one of the things, it was one of the things that was talked about in prior iterations of Eagle Ranch proposals. It's certainly something I think everybody'd be very interested in. I just don't know that there's a percentage. I don't know. What do you guys think on the left here? Yeah, if we're talking about trails and through trails and stuff.
I think when a serious proposal comes forward to develop that Eagle Ranch, this is all going to get discussed. No point doing it twice.
Councilmember Peak.
I'm in a position to really have an opinion on it right now in terms of what I've looked into.
Maybe I'm getting fatigued, but I kind of just feel like this is not something we need to go into now.
So we have a, you know, some interest in the policy, but not necessarily in, into the plan, the
right.
language of the plan.
But did I hear a motocross park in Eagle Ranch, Susan?
Yes, sir. But that'll do me.
Okay. All right. Staff, do you have what you need from us? Are there any lingering questions on your part that we need to answer?
I think Kelly's got some clarifications that she'd like to make on some consensus on some items.
I'll hop in. I think a couple things that we heard that we didn't hear from everybody were some visioning policy for Fine Arts Academy property and the Armory.
I mean, I brought that up. If you don't think it's necessary or helpful, I just thought, I mean, part of our vision in the downtown is to purchase the Armory site. I think we'd like to see, the school property ultimately become available for other uses.
I think we could add some policy languages. There's consensus on that.
Yeah. Is there anybody object to saying is that just say that, the city intends to purchase the Armory property and use it for something. And as part
use it
of
for something
is part of the
I'm
overall
fine with that.
Overall,
that we're not selling it to someone else.
No,
right.
No. And that the city, you know, also sees the possibility of downtown school site becoming available for
and we can come up with some language that is obviously not specific to those sites but allows for integration into the downtown if they were to change ownership or use.
I mean, obviously we don't want to get deep into the school district's business, but the point is there was a time when we as a city did particularly the school where they did but rather move out towards Rio sort of thing. Obviously, they're an independent decision-making body, and they did what they did. But I don't think it would hurt for the city to express its interest in that property.
Yeah, I would encourage us to talk with the school district before we place in our general plan. It's speculative, Eagle Ranch, but I'm willing to say that if that's something that you want.
It's just a generic comment. It doesn't have to be there. I'm just saying that, we, in general terms, have an interest in that property.
I would, in terms of the Armory, we're not saying anything beyond the fact that we are purchasing it and we'll be using it for city purposes. We're not going to be leasing it or promising to lease it to anybody, like a school.
I wouldn't think
at this moment.
We'll have to do with the property once we own the property. But
is there anything in the zoning in the category of those properties that would preclude us from being free to make decisions that consistent with what you're hearing here?
The Fine Arts Academy is currently zoned public, and so if that ever dropped out of state school district control, we would be looking at a general plan amendment for that anyways, but we could add some vague guidance language in there to just explore integration into downtown and adjacent uses when that time comes.
Sure. And I wouldn't want to change designation without chatting with the school district.
Yeah. And so just to summarize a couple other, and we can just maybe nod some heads, or if anybody has major objections, we can object. We have, we're going to explore some childcare language, visioning for fine arts and armory. We're going to bring back some discussion on non-city maintained roads and truck routes and how we can address that best. Acknowledge religious facilities and the place types. I think we can do that. Add some more language specifically facilitating allowances for off-grid homes or partially off-grid homes, and maybe bringing back some language to explore financing of undergrounding of existing utilities.
Okay. Sounds like you've got what you need from us.
Yes, there was just one more that we just want to nod on, changing some of the hotel language to when we support existing hotels, it's not just for renovation, but more vague language for a multitude of things that we could do to support not only new hotels, but existing hotels on occupancy.
Okay. Anybody object? Okay, got it. Okay, all right. Very good. This has been a long one, but like I said earlier, we only do this every 20 to 25 years, so it was going to take a while. Thank you all. Now,
what's that?
Yeah, I don't think any of us will be here for the next general plan update. Okay, so at this point in time, we will proceed to council announcements and committee reports. I'll start on my right with Councilmember Funk.
I don't have anything exciting going on in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, nor do I. We do have a IWMA meeting coming up. We hosted the county mayor's roundtable at the rooftop on Cielo and had pizza and salad, so that worked out very nice. Nothing really of note to report, but it was a good session. We had our speaker from the League of Cities. Legislative office talked about an update on all of the things that all of the bills that were signed by the governor after the legislative session. Of course, of key interest to us was the bill that directed the military department to dispose of 7 or 8 armories, including ours. So we're very happy about that. There was a discussion that Assemblymember Addis's bill passed that would enable or direct the addition of 10 new liquor licenses in SLO County. No clarity on how those 10 will be allocated, and so that remains to be seen. And separately, you've all done police ride-alongs or fire ride-alongs. Last week, I did a garbage truck ride-along, and it was very interesting. You guys might want to consider trying it sometime. So. And I think that's it. Mayor Pro Tem Darris.
I've had a quiet couple of weeks and not much coming up, so I have nothing to report.
Councilmember Pete.
Councilwoman Newsom and I had the pleasure of meeting with Tom Bennett, our superintendent, for the first time prior to our city schools committee meeting next month, more formal meeting. So we had a nice sit down. Assistant City Manager Laura was there and got to meet him, got to hear a little bit about his plans for the school district and all that fun stuff, and looking forward to it.
Very good, thank you. Any individual determinations? Okay, seeing none, we are adjourned. Thank you all.
At this time, AM 1230 KPRL concludes this portion of the Atascadero City Council meeting, brought to you by Idler's Home. More of what you want for your home. Go to idlershome.com.
Costing us an arm and a leg just to heat and cool our homes.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing, since you ended up with this, I'm reminded of Barack Obama's famous line where he promised that under his plan, electricity costs would necessarily skyrocket, because that's Barack Obama's plan for energy, and it's happening in New Jersey and in Massachusetts and in New York.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
Yeah, and that's the Democrat, the left-wing plan, your electricity rates, and your grandmother is just going to have to, shiver in the cold and wrap a blanket around herself or something. But you said, Peter, that he's going to put caps on apartments, on the maximum that could be charged for a studio apartment. Now, is the studio apartment 400 square feet in the basement of Brooklyn, or is it on the top of a skyscraper on the Upper East Side overlooking Central Park? Is that studio 2,300 square feet, or is it 400 square feet? Does it have parking? But I got to tell you, the free market, Peter, has managed to keep, and you said Rudy Giuliani. There was no affordability crisis in New York under Rudy Giuliani. Nobody was screaming about this is the new buzzword of the left is affordability. And of course, their solution to making things affordable is government, massive government intervention, and the claw of government, the iron fist of government, the hobnailed boot comes down on the heads of property owners, who they call landowners, because you work your whole life, Peter, to grow up in New York City, you grow up in Queens, maybe like somebody like Donald Trump, and your father has a reasonably successful business, and then you say, well, I'm going to go into business, and before long, you're putting up skyscrapers that are 80 stories high with your name on top, and thousands of people live in them and work in them, and the free market. So you don't believe in the free market, I can tell, Peter. And kind of ironic, I thought, that you're talking about Zohran Mamdani and how he has caught fire. He's caught fire, given that he's a major anti-Semite, and the Democrats are firebombing the Jewish governor's mansion in Pennsylvania, firebombing a pro-Israel march in Colorado, that they're self-immolating and killing themselves at the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. So if you're going to run for office, and you said you're running for office or you had been running for office, I might change the turn of phrase caught fire when I'm talking about Zohran Mamdani. You know what I'm talking about, Peter?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, you make a lot of great points, of course. And hey, I'm all for everything you just said, and a free market capitalist. And, you know, I'm in real estate myself, but when you get this gouging and this unfair, I don't know how you want to say it or phrase it, but you know, it's unfair. Where if it's unaffordable, like, you know, take for example the healthcare premiums, that's why the government is currently shut down. So wouldn't it make sense to put a cap on a free market and just look at the outrage? There's a United CEO that's lying dead in the streets of New York City. So the outrage of the people, it's visible. We could see it. People taking action, which they shouldn't be.
You think the assassin?
So there needs to be intervention.
Intervention
by the government. Like, we need to, you know, get a control of these the CEOs, the companies, if they're unfairly taking advantage of the American people. Shouldn't the government intervene? Shouldn't we have caps? Shouldn't there something be done, Mr. Plant?
Well, no, because caps kill instantly the free market. You say you're in favor of a free market, and then the next sentence out of your mouth is that you destroy the free market by having government intervention that puts caps on. Now, the market finds the cap because it's what the market will allow. And you're right, Manhattan is very expensive, in Manhattan in particular, New York City more generally. It is very expensive. Washington, D.C. is very expensive. I would imagine there are parts of Houston where you're calling from that are very expensive as well.
If you don't mind me, Chris, like, I'm in real estate and we do mortgages, so there's ratios. They won't give you a loan if your debt to income ratio is too high. So shouldn't there be a calculation like that? Like, okay, this is the median income of this area, 80,000. So we shouldn't be charging, 45% of their income. You kind of see where I'm going with that. Shouldn't there be some sort of fairness in our system?
There is fairness.
The government, since they're controlling the levers.
There is fairness in our system under the free market, and you should know that perfectly well. And interest rates, I think, are at a 3-year low at least, right? And when it comes to housing prices, it's a self-regulating market. And if you're in the real estate business, you should certainly know this very well, that it's whatever the market will bear. If somebody puts a house on the market for $1 million, but you know where you are in Houston, but you know that the actual value of the house is probably $750,000, then you know it's not going to sell for $1 million because the market regulates that. The market puts a cap on that. The buyer puts a cap on that. And that's what the free market does. The free market regulates it. In a free man's world, and that means free women too, by the way, free men and free women. But you also seem to suggest that it was kind of justifiable for Luigi Mangione to assassinate Brian Thompson, the CEO of United Healthcare.
Not justifiable. I'm just saying, sorry to interrupt you there, cause and effect. So I'm 100% not justifiable. I'm just saying this is the outrage. So it's like cause and effect when we start to see these actions of people taking the law into their own hands. So wouldn't that precede the government to, say, intervene? Like, right, maybe had some sort of a point. So we need to, something for the common people that someone's actually looking out from. Not, you know, like you hear about after a hurricane, like Jamaica's about to face, like these price gouging the different things, and not an emergency. This is just everyday standard.
I had not heard that they're about to face price gouging. I heard that they're about to face a hurricane, a category 5
hurricane.
And
then after a hurricane, that's what happens. You get business take advantage of people. They raise the price of oil and gas. And
You mean when there are shortages of things after a hurricane, that prices tend to go up. But you're suggesting that a bunch of Democrats are going to go down there and rob the black people of Jamaica and accuse them of being from Haiti. You know, like at the Winsome Sears rally last week. But I got to tell you, Luigi Mangione murdered the CEO of United Healthcare, Brian Thompson, because of the kind of rhetoric that you're parroting right now, that the healthcare company is the villain of the story and the CEO is the villain of the story, and you say it's cause and effect.
Wasn't doing anything to put caps. I mean, sorry to interrupt there, but continue.
Which you keep doing, but and that's okay too. But listen. It's not his job to put caps on, he does put caps on.
Have some ratio to fairness to make it fair for the American people, that you and I, Chris, the consumer.
Well, there are so many things to say about this, honestly, because, Peter, the Democrats just completed that. It's called Obamacare. It's called the Affordable Care. It's called the Affordable Care Act. This is why you don't know much. You don't listen very often.
What's the Republican solution? I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Chris.
It's free market. It's free market capitalism, and having the greatest healthcare system in the history of the world. That's what the American solution is. I'm sorry. What was the last part?
If Congress is going to be out of session, looks like permanently now. So then, come up with a plan.
I'm sorry. The government's going to be what? It's going to be shut down permanently.
It looks like it's maybe.
It's going to be shut. So the government is never coming back, never going to reopen? Well, because the Democrats shut it down, right, Peter?
Well, or they could do the nuclear option. What's up with that? Why don't they do the nuclear option in the Senate? They're blaming 7 Senate Democrats.
Well, because they respect unlike the Democrats, when Barack Obama wanted his federal judges rushed through, and Harry Reid, the Democrat leader of the Senate then, said, we're going to nuke the filibuster, and we're going to get all of Barack Obama's nominees through on 50 votes. And you may remember that the turtle, Mitch McConnell, said at the time that you may regret this and probably sooner than you think. And then Donald Trump got 3 Supreme Court justices put on the Supreme Court because the Democrats had blown up the filibuster in the Senate because they used the so-called nuclear option, which is overly dramatic rhetoric, but it's typical as well. And I got to tell you, Obamacare was supposed to fix. They promised us that this was going to fix healthcare in the United States, which they said was broken. And they said that terrible CEOs like Brian Thompson were the problem because they didn't put caps on costs. So the communist Barack Hussein Obama, he said, well, we'll fix it. And he was proud. It was called Obamacare mockingly. And he's like, oh, I'm proud it's called Obamacare. I want it named after me. And then I've talked about it here before, Peter, about how my premiums, my health care, Blue Cross Blue Shield, went from $320 a month to more than $1,300 a month, thanks to Obamacare. My best girl, $220 or $230 a month, went to more than $1,200 a month. Now we're $2,500, $2,600 a month just in my household, just to pay the premiums that used to cost us $500 a month. And that was the Democrats fixing it. You know why, Peter? That's the government fix. And this has happened again and again in countries all over the world. Look at what's going on in Great Britain. What a clown car their healthcare system is, and how
I'm
ridiculous.
Sure it is.
And
I'm
I got
sure
to tell you, Peter,
I'm sorry,
you guys
sorry
keep
to hear
saying
that about yours, but we've had more people insured under this Obamacare. I know
that's because it's mandatory. It's mandatory. The Democrats don't care.
You're right.
So it's mandatory. So more people have it because there's a gun to their head, because they'll be breaking the law if they don't, because the Democrats are like organized crime. It's like the gambling scheme with, you know, the basketball players. Just amazing stuff. The government puts a gun to your head and said you have to buy it. And then people buy it and Democrats say, oh, see, more people are on health insurance than ever before. And that's because Democrats don't care what you do as long as it's mandatory. As long as it's mandatory, the Democrats are with it.
Right. Well, this was right. You know, even last year, I believe it was 30 million or 20 million people insured, the highest insured rate, and that was
it was mandatory. It's the government made it illegal.
But not.
What do you mean? They're forcing you to do it. If they made it mandatory that everybody smoke pot every day, then you could say more people smoke pot than ever before because the government made it mandatory. Come on, Pedro, you're a lot smarter than that.
Which we could probably, you know, reduce that $38 trillion if it were descheduled cannabis were descheduled. And
oh, there you go. Now you got the answer to the national debt by legalizing. Pot's already been legalized, all right. And you know, Mom Donnie wants to legalize heroin and fentanyl in New York. Are you voting for Mom Donnie? Are you voting for Mom Donnie?
Yeah, he has my vote right now, and hopefully I can influence someone to, you know, at least support me, hear him out.
He has your vote, but you live in Houston.
I'm a resident of Houston.
Yeah, I was going to say, he has your vote, but you don't live in New York.
Right, so, hey, good job, Mr. Zohan, Mr. Peter Filler, the voice of the people is with you.
The voice of the people, yeah. Was Karl Marx the voice of the people as well?
None.
You're a little hesitant on that. How about Osama bin Laden, the voice of the people?
No, just Peter Filler, my friend, and thank you very much.
As Peter from Houston. Thanks, Peter. You're wrong about everything, but you're relatively polite in the scheme of things, so we'll take that. Try not to shoot anyone today if you could.
You're listening to The Chris Plant Show.
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too.
Newsmax has been terrific.
President Trump is right. Millions like you are tuning into Newsmax. You're watching Newsmax on cable. You're going to our streaming channel, Newsmax 2. And you're downloading our free Newsmax app on your smartphones and TVs. Reuters Institute says we're now one of the top news brands in the nation. Every night, watch great shows with Rob Schmidt, Carl Higbee, Rob Finnerty, and more as they expose the big media lies, the Washington swamp, and they're never afraid to talk about faith, freedom, and the values that made us great. Find out why Newsmax is the fastest-growing news channel in America. Make the switch today and join our news revolution. Get Newsmax on cable, on streaming, and download the free app today. It takes just seconds to start. Let President Trump know you stand with Newsmax. It's for real news, for real people. Make the switch today.
Paid for by Christian Care Ministry.
Okay, some good news during a challenging time for everybody, and this could really help. You may know hundreds of thousands of people have already made the switch to MediShare, which is the affordable alternative to health insurance. And with so many people looking at how they're paying for healthcare right now, seeing premiums going up and the cost of healthcare, MediShare has a special offer, and a lot of people are taking advantage of it. Just apply by October 31st, and they'll waive your new member fee. You're saving $100 right off the bat. That's just the start. Obviously, the typical family saves up to $500 a month after making the switch. And MediShare is a Christian community that's shared more than $9 billion in medical bills over the years. It's worked beautifully for decades. I'll give you the number here in a second. If you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to get your additional savings too. Here it is. Call 855-51-BIBLE. That's 855-51-BIBLE. 855-51-BIBLE.
Brought to you by Central Coast Tractor Work. Demolition, trenching, grading, brush removal, and more. No job is too small. Clear tonight and overnight, lows in the mid to upper 80s. Sunny Wednesday, mid 80s, same Thursday. Weather was brought to you by Central Coast Tractor Work, 805-440-6361. KPRL.
The Raiders on the right choice. AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM.
Welcome to the All-Star Moments of Freedom. Now, if your happy place is somewhere you unwind with a cold drink, delicious food, and sports on more LED screens than you can shake a remote at, well, then the sports bar at Chumash is your new escape. Doesn't matter if you're cheering on your favorite team or just enjoying the vibe. It's game on, friend. And hey, welcome to freedom. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you know someone that's working on redoing their yard? Steve Schmidt Topsoil has gift certificates for the do-it-yourselfer in your life. They deliver DG, road base, planter mix for the garden, and products for erosion control for cooler, wetter weather. Give the gift of a beautifully landscaped home. Call Steve Schmidt Topsoil, 805-237-0174, or stop by the Little Red Caboose off the 101.
When you need a plumber, chances are you need one right away. That's why Red's On-Time Plumbing is available 24/7 with same-day service. Red's On-Time Plumbing has a 5-star rating on Google. Get a great plumber and quick. If you're planning a project, Red's has convenient online booking and always gives free estimates. Ask about a $1,000 SoCal rebate on high-efficiency tankless water heaters. Schedule now at ontimeplumbingpro.com or call Red's On-Time Plumbing at 805-466-6188.
Matt's Smog is more than smog. They do oil changes as well, and they offer unique oil services with supplemental oil additives and fuel system cleaners, brake work and diagnostics as well. All vehicles receive a comprehensive 29-point inspection, but most importantly, there are no high-pressure sales tactics. Matt's Smog takes care of more than your car. They take care of you. Call 805-237-2601 or head to 834 Paso Robles Street in Paso for Matt's Smog and more.
Plaza Cleaners in Atascadero and Paso Robles is your local Quality Plus cleaner, and they do it all. Dry cleaning and laundry, pickup and delivery service, Saturday service, and motel service. And they're now open in Atascadero weekdays until 7 and Saturdays until 5 in both locations. In Paso Robles, Niblick Road and the Albertson Shopping Center. And in Atascadero, El Camino Real and the Glen Oaks Plaza. And remember, bring in your American flags and they'll clean them for free. Plaza Cleaners, Atascadero and Paso Robles.
Democrats is in Houston, but I think Peter's going to vote for Mamdani in New York. He kind of slipped at the beginning and said, yeah, oh, he's got my vote, right? He lives in Houston. The mayor's race is in New York City, but it's a Democrat thing. You know, I grew up in Chicago where family members would sign up tombstones and then made sure that they showed up on election day because it's Chicago. But I see that we have people that have called in response to Pedro from Texas as well. Let's go to Paul calling from Reston, Virginia. Paolo, you're on the Chris Plant Show.
Chris, I love this show so much, but I was going to have a coronary as I listened to the last caller. A few things. First, if Democrats ran the desert, we would run out of sand. Uh-huh. That's been around for a while.
Uh-huh.
And the reason for that is price controls. Repeat after me, everybody listening. Price controls lead to shortage. We have known this economically for decades. He talked about freezing the rent in New York. Uh-huh. There has been rent control in New York for decades, right? There is rent control in California, and it's been there since the 70s. What do New York and California have in common? The rents are through the roof.
And people are fleeing. And people are fleeing both states.
Right. Yeah. Right. You actually have demand going down in California, yet the prices still rise. Only government could figure out how to do that. What's really ironic is Pedro is calling from Houston, and the major markets in Houston